Hello, friends. This is Pastor Harley Wheeler with the Broadway United Methodist Church. This special, the standalone podcast, is looking at material in Nehemiah chapter 3. And the reason we're looking at Nehemiah chapter 3 is that this chapter, doing this appeals to me because this chapter is often considered, well, not exactly a throwaway chapter or unimportant, but certainly less rewarding to read. This is one of those chapters, my friends, in the Bible that has names. And it describes a material task being accomplished there, building these people so named are building a wall. They even go to say sometimes they will call somebody, Palei, the son of Uzai, and sometimes they tell you who Uzai might have been the son of, all naming all these generations. It is just, I suppose, what people complain about when you talk to them about reading the Bible. We tend to skip over these difficult passages, and this passage really, frankly, is not designed to be preached, though I can preach on just about any verse of the Bible, frankly, with the feeblest provocation. It is not promising material because the whole chapter kind of hangs together. Reading one piece of it really doesn't get you anywhere in terms of arriving at a point. Some of the details that are very telling won't carry the weight of a whole sermon. And trying to get too reflective or to find heavy metaphors in these is frankly likely to come across as inauthentic. But I am anxious that we do not have any throwaway chapters in our Bibles and would instead practice reflective reading with the expectation that we will find grace and instruction and encouragement in even the chapters that present a tedious job to read. So let us find in Nehemiah 3 what we can learn if we read the chapter closely. Now first, if you're reading in the book of Nehemiah, you'll find that it's written by Mr. Nehemiah. Though this chapter is mostly in the third person, telling this person did this and this other person did that. Much of the book is written as I did this and I went here and I heard this and I responded by doing that. Nehemiah talks using the I word because he is in Jerusalem doing things and it is his deeds and in his direction and the account is coming in the first person as if he was writing a diary. And so it's actually refreshing because it's a different point of view than we get reading most of the other Bible passages. The short story on Nehemiah was that after the Israelites had been cast out of their land, so do understand, long ago they had entered Egypt. Then under Moses, they left Egypt because Egypt had become an oppressive place and they had a destiny to live in the Promised Land. Under Moses, they traveled the wilderness, and then under Joshua, they entered the Promised Land. Some centuries later, King David arose and established a capital at Jerusalem, where the center of the people's life was. David was followed by Solomon, but then by an uneven succession of kings, some good, some bad. And prophets arose to say that if people did not adhere to God's covenant, and if they didn't listen to his ways, if they live without regard to God and his holiness, they would be cast out of their land. This is what is called the exile. And as much as the passing through the Red Sea to deliverance from the land of Egypt was a pivotal story for the Jews, this idea of being in exile was pivotal for the Jews. In fact, they still would have said they're pretty much in exile when Jesus came. That though many of them lived around Jerusalem, it wasn't right. It wasn't a nation. They had not learned yet to walk in his covenant ways. And so the Bible is taking us through that sweep of history to get to the point where, as the prophets promised, God would do something about it himself. And he did by coming himself in Jesus Christ. We are at the point where they have returned from exile. Some people are living in Jerusalem. Some Jews have taken up residence there and begin ruling it as living in it and managing it as a Jewish city. Nehemiah himself hears that the city has no walls. And why build a wall? Well, for the first place, you know, a wall ensured that you could have possessions and somebody wouldn't come in the middle of the night and steal them. A wall also defined a city, so that you could tell where the city started and where it ended. City gates, because Nehemiah said its walls are torn down and its gates are burned with fire. The city gates were where you could go have a matter settled. If someone didn't pay you for something you sold him, you could go to the city gate, pick out some of the elders who were hanging around there, and they became an impromptu court. They heard the evidence and passed judgment. If there's not any one place in the city where this can go on, how are you to get any judgments? Consider that it would be always so easy for the rich and well-connected to get their way if there was no way to call them to account. They were in danger from the neighbors, and it was just a disgrace to have walls laying in rubble and heaps. The Jews had been back something like 50 to 70 years by the time Nehemiah's day comes, and he was a servant to the emperor in Persia. He was his butler, his cupbearer, so he was an influential person, and he heard this news about the city. He was distressed. He approached the king and asked for leave to leave the king's employ, take letters, take some resources, and go rebuild that city. And the king said, you go right ahead and do that. So Nehemiah is rebuilding a wall. It had been 50, 60, 70 years that some Jews had been living there. They kind of built somewhat a temple that to begin to worship God there. And indeed, some of that portion of that temple is going to be there when Jesus walks into Jerusalem. But they'd done nothing about the wall. Nehemiah inspected the wall. You might almost ask yourself, people might have said, well, what rubble? I mean, it's been like that all this time. We kind of like it this way. But Nehemiah says, no, to be the proper city, it needs a wall for all those reasons mentioned before. And you have to kind of smile and say there probably was a wall committee. They just hadn't got anything done for 50, 60, 70 years. So we come to chapter 3, and you get verses like this. Verse 1, then Eliashib the high priest rose up with his brothers, the priest, and they built the sheep gate. They consecrated it and set its doors. They consecrated it as far as the Tower of the Hundred, as far as the Tower of Hananel. And next to him, the men of Jericho built. And next to them, Zachur the son of Imri built. The sons of Hassanah built the fish gate. They laid its beams and set its doors, its bolts and its bars. And next to them, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, son of Hakoz, repaired. Well, I think you get the feeling for how this goes. It is of a difficult chapter to read. What is going on is Nehemiah, instead of starting at one point in the wall and building all the way around, a multitude of people have said, we will rebuild this section. The miracle that happens is that within 50, 60 days, they have completed the wall, something nobody thought that they could do. But by each one taking a section and working on it, setting aside the other important business, and sometimes in a subsistence economy, at some risk to themselves, you know, they might not have the harvest, they might not have the farm production that they hoped, they might not have the business and trade that they hope to transact, but they all work together to rebuild the wall, taking it, each person taking on a section is their responsibility. But the chapter is full of names, and they go from section of the wall to section of the wall to section of the wall. What do we learn if we read this chapter closely? First, I had to read it to see if they actually completed the whole wall. It's surprising how invested I felt in about this question. I was glad to find that Eliashib the high priest and his fellow priests began at the sheep gate, and finally, if you read through the whole chapter, the goldsmiths, the merchants, and that group were to be found finishing up the wall to the sheep gate from the other end. I believe this feeling of worry, you know, as I reflect upon it, as I'm worrying, will they build the whole wall, is part of how we read the Bible. We press ahead. We root for God's people. We're invested in this. And we want to see the whole plan of redemption accomplished. This is why the book of Revelations ends with a scene of heaven and a city built for God's people. So first off, there I learned. I found myself as a reader rooting for them to do this, hoping they completed it all, hoping that that they recorded every section so that we know that it was done. If one mark of good writing is that you care about the characters, you know, I read the Bible and I care about the characters. Now, second, the high priest and the goldsmiths and the merchants appear side by side. Now, there is nobody more highfalutin, we might say, than the high priest. He had an honored position. He had a position of great dignity, in a position that kept him connected with the best and the brightest and the wealthiest. And also, he would have been wealthy himself. This leads us to think about who are these people. The whole community is represented here. There are governing officials, people from outlying communities, guilds, trade guilds, like the perfumers and the goldsmiths. There were merchants. There were private citizens with no designation at all. Lay people participated, and what we would call clergy, priests and Levites, participated. The common good, as represented by the safety and community needs for a wall, is also understood to be part of the spiritual needs of the people. We're often in a place of needing to renew. Even in alive a church, as Broadway is seeking to reverse the decline of many, many years now. Collaboration is often the key for renewal like this. And so we think about collaborating with community actors, with people and other churches within the community when we find something that it's worthwhile to work together on. And also, these people, all of them are not seeing this as someone else's job. It is seen as their job. We are seeing that the well-off, as I lifted up how important Mr. Eliashib was, they certainly diverted their employees to the task, their servants, people in their households. And it's also pretty much implied that someone is revered as important as Mr. Eliashib, hauled stone, mixed mortar, stood there with his trowel. And the same applies to, later on in the chapter, Rephaiah, son of Hur. He was ruler of half a district of Jerusalem in verse 9. We want to apply this, as we think and reflect on it, to our current elite class. Make your own comparisons. You know, sometimes they take part in little work events, oftentimes with people photographing, though not always. Many enjoy donating their time anonymously without acclamation. But to look at the real common good of, say, one town and one place and say, I will work alongside others to see this happen. You don't see that happen very often. Now, the third thing that comes on reflection is that the participants are surprisingly recognized for their contribution. Now, I come from a time where I can remember that most churches were kind of littered everywhere with little plaques saying so-and-so donated this, so-and-so is donated the money for that, this was put up in the memory of another person. And we've actually gotten somewhat away from that because, frankly, it did seem that it was getting out of hand and sometimes might send the wrong message that we participate in church so as to get our names up on the wall. We are less likely to value this. We very often rightly suppose that service is always more praiseworthy when it's anonymous. And indeed, in verse 22, there are priests that are working next to the high priest Eliashib's house who are all unnamed. But there is also a place to declare who believed the work of God was worth their time and effort. It is not merely an Old Testament thing. St. Paul, say in Romans chapter 16, commends people for their work and calls them co-workers in the gospel. In fact, there are notes of this in nearly all of his letters. Now, speaking of contributions, the nobles of Tekoa in verse 5 are called out for not taking part. Their laziness is recorded in the Bible, no less. Whereas in verse 20, Baruch, son of Zabai, is recognized for working zealously. So he stands for all time, been, you know, near 2,500 years have gone by, and people can remember Baruch's enthusiasm. Another interesting contribution, Shallum's daughters. Verse 12, Shallum and his daughters repaired a section of the wall. The daughters represent the unusual picture of a women's work crew. You think they did the work in verse 12? I do believe they did. It doesn't sound like they got other people to do it. No, they did it. Going on with contributions, 10 outlying areas sent workers. Towns, Tekoa, Rizpah, Gilead, you know, these kind of places, Jericho. The distance from those towns to Jerusalem was 4 to 14 miles away. Some of them might not have been so very connected with even the idea of Jerusalem as a major city. But it was a one-way walk. like so many others, work that was needing doing at home had to be covered in another way. And it is interesting also that I estimate from Bible atlases that there are about 50 outlying communities around Jerusalem, but only 10 sent workers. Maybe some felt it was too much of a sacrifice. Some may have had no Jewish inhabitants yet because the Jews were still in the process of returning. Some may have feared reprisals. The book of Nehemiah has, gratifyingly, villains who are put in their place. People named things like Sanballat and Tobiah, who disputed the work on the wall and tried to distract Nehemiah. And Nehemiah came back with answers like, "I am doing a mighty work here. I don't have time to come down and talk to you." But their influence might have been heavy in some villages, and perhaps they needed to show more courage and faith. Perhaps they had no ability. We cannot know, though it's interesting to ask, why are the others not here? Surely there is a failure of heart and faith. But we also can understand that even the most meaningful projects will not have 100% participation. And that's important as we renew and rebuild in our church and even in our families and communities. I've never met the project that appealed to 100% of the people. For some people, it's just not on their radar. For some people, their burdens are great, or their distraction just cannot be cut through. You don't need 100% participation. You need faithful participation, and you do need a key amount. So we're glad for the 10 communities that walked, again, 4 to 14 miles one way. They might have had to spend the night, or they might have had to start very early each day to do this work. But we also are reminded to ourselves that not all come. And I'm wanting to say that's okay in terms of the sake of the project. Because what God wills and His Spirit is empowering and what He is lifting up to be accomplished will indeed be accomplished. It is interesting that they took just less than 2 months to finish the wall. The sudden, concentrated effort of a community brings fruit. There probably, as I said, was a wall committee that had accomplished nothing. This is not a wall committee. This is a group of people coming together. As I'm getting closer to closing, the many names provide some last insights. Quite a few of them appear elsewhere in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. The book of Ezra is closely related to the time and the project that Nehemiah puts forth. These people are listed as supporters, as people dedicated to the resettlement of Jerusalem. There is evidence of a touching three generations working together on the wall. For instance, in verse 4, Meshulam, son of Berechiah, son of Mehishabel, is mentioned, and the grandfather, Mehishabel, is mentioned elsewhere in Nehemiah as signer of a community covenant. Nehemiah inspired people. God worked alongside him to use both his connection, his authority, his knowledge, and also just the contagiousness of his enthusiasm. So it's good to read this. See, you can pick up some things as reflecting on this text. And so that's what I wanted to close with. Just remember, you know, the remarkable industry of Shalom's daughters, the enthusiasm of Baruch, son of Zabai. And when we think about somebody like the nobles of Tekoa, who were called out as lazy, not wanting to put their shoulders to the work, we say, wow, that's pretty bad to have be called out by name in the Bible for people to read for, again, 2,500 years. But all that we do is seen by God and by heaven. And so we reach out to Jesus Christ because we know we're not going to earn our way into heaven by what we do. But by His grace and by faith in His name, we are saved. And what He calls us to do, we will accomplish. So I'm going to close this podcast just by reading Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 1. Then Eliashib the high priest rose up with his brothers the priests, and they built the sheep gate. They consecrated it and set its doors. They consecrated it as far as the Tower of the Hundred, as far as the Tower of Hananel. And next to him the men of Jericho built, and next to them Zakur the son of Imri built. The sons of Hassanah built the fish gate. They laid its beams and set its doors, its bolts and its bars. And next to them, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Hakoz, repaired. And next to them, Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, the son of Mehesh-Zabel, repaired. And next to them, Zadok, the son of Bana, repaired. And next to them, the Tekoites repaired, but their nobles would not stoop to serve their lord. Joiada, the son of Paseah, and Meshullam, the son of Besodiah, repaired the gate of Yeshanah. They laid its beams and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars, and next to them repaired Melatiah the Gibeonite and Jadon the Maranothite, the men of Gibeon and of Mizpah, the seat of the governor of the province beyond the river. Next to them Uzziel, the son of Harhiah, the goldsmiths, repaired. Next to them, to him, Hananiah, one of the perfumers, repaired, and they restored Jerusalem as far as the broad wall. Next to them, Rephaiah, the son of Hur, ruler of a half-district of Jerusalem, repaired. Next to them, Jediah, the son of Haramuph, repaired opposite his house. And next to him, Hattush, the son of Hashabniah, repaired. Malchijah, the son of Haram, and Hashub, the son of Pehath-Moab, repaired another section and the Tower of the Ovens. Next to him, Shalom, the son of Halohesh, ruler of a half-district of Jerusalem, repaired, he and his daughters. Hanan and the inhabitants of Zanoah repaired the valley gate. They repaired it and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars, and repaired 1,000 cubits of the wall as far as the dung gate. Malchijah, the son of Rechab, ruler of the district of Beth-Hekarim, repaired the dung gate. He rebuilt it and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. And Shalom, the son of Kolhoze, ruler of the district of Mizpah, repaired the fountain gate. He repaired it and covered it and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. And he built the wall of the pool of Shelah of the king's garden, as far as the stairs that go down from the city of David. After him, Nehemiah, the son of Azbuk, ruler of half the district of Beth-Zur, repaired to a point opposite the tombs of David, as far as the artificial pool and as far as the houses of the mighty men. After him, the Levites repaired. Reum, the son of Benai. Next to them, to him, Hashabiah, ruler of the district of Keilah, repaired for his district. After him, their brothers repaired. Bevai, the son of Henadad, ruler of the district of Keilah. Next to him, Ezer, the son of Jeshua, ruler of Mizpah, repaired another section opposite the ascent to the armory at the buttress. After him, Baruch, the son of Zabai, repaired another section from the buttress to the door of the house of Eliashib, the high priest. And it says that Baruch repaired zealously. After him, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, son of Hakoz, repaired another section from the door of the house of Eliashib to the end of the house of Eliashib. After him, the priests, the men of the surrounding area, repaired. After them, Benjamin and Hashab repaired opposite their house. After them, Azariah, the son of Messiah, the son of Ananiah, repaired beside his own house. And we might pause here to see that people repaired by their own houses. They could no longer just step out through the wall to get to the fields. They also weren't big, not in my backyard people. Or isn't it somebody else's job to build the wall people? The wall was near the house. They did it. So, taking up at verse 24, after him, Binui, the son of Henadad, repaired another section from the house of Azariah to the buttress and to the corner. Pelel, the son of Uzai, repaired opposite the buttress and the tower projecting from the upper house of the king at the court of the guard. After him, Pedaiah, the son of Parash, and the temple servants living in on Ophel, repaired to a point opposite the water gate on the east and the projecting tower. After him, the Tekoites repaired another section opposite the great projecting tower, as far as the wall of Ophel. Above the horse gate, the priest repaired, each one opposite his own house. After them, Zadok, the son of Immer, repaired opposite his own house. After him, Shemaiah, the son of Shechaniah, the keeper of the east gate, repaired. After him, Hananiah, the son of Shelemiah, and Hanan, the sixth son of Zaleph, repaired another section. After him, Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, repaired opposite his chamber. After him, Malchijah, one of the goldsmiths, repaired as far as the house of the temple of the servants and of the merchants, opposite the muster gate, and to the upper chamber of the corner, and between the upper chamber of the corner and the sheep gate, where they began, the goldsmiths and the merchants repaired. Let's close in prayer. Lord, we thank you for all these that worked, indeed for all those who have faithfully labored and faithfully died. But also, Lord, that you would look upon our lives, set us to fruitful work, but set us to your work, whether we see the fruit or not, whether we set aside or are thrust into the midst, whether we are put forward or held back. Lord, all we have is yours. Bring us, Lord, into your will to labor for you, and we thank you for our co-laborers in the gospel. Amen. This has been Pastor Harley Wheeler with the Broadway United Methodist Church with this special podcast in Nehemiah chapter 3, Building the Wall. God bless.